Love is love. Love is love. I'm sure we've all heard or seen that phrase many times. It's one line that we will find among a list of what we might call, I suppose, secular creed statements on the signs that some people have in their front yards. Love is love has been a key phrase in support of same-sex marriage, especially when it was legalized in our country several years ago. Love is love implies, I suppose, that all love is the same, whether it is between one man and one woman, or two men or two women. But is it true? Is it true to say that all love is love? Or in other words, that all love is the same? It seems to me that the love you might have for your best friend or your pet or your favorite food is not the same kind of love that is between one man and one woman, and that results in the procreation of children. It seems that many of the statements of that secular creed, if you want to call it that, those found on those yard signs, require some serious critical examination, even though many of them, I suppose, contain significant kernels of truth. Now, I bring up love is love because it points to the underlying issue, although not directly mentioned in our first reading today from Genesis. In those days, the Lord said, "The outcry against Sodom and Gomorrah is so great, and their sins so grave." The rest of the reading reveals God's mercy. The rest of the reading is to reveal God's mercy in how Abraham gets God to agree, as the Old Testament-inspired authors spoke of God in a very human sort of relational way, gets God to agree that if there were at least 10 innocent people, he would not destroy the city of Sodom. I don't think I need to be explicit about what was the sin of Sodom. We have a word for it that comes from the city's name. The inspired scriptures are unambiguous in their teaching about homosexual acts. But the scriptures are also unambiguous about God's mercy and forgiveness, which can only be received when there is conversion of heart and contrition. Homosexuality or same-sex attraction is an issue that affects pretty much everybody today in some capacity. I imagine that most all of us here has a family member or friend or someone we know who deals with same-sex attraction and who may be very open about it, or be in a relationship, or be in a union that is recognized as a quote-unquote marriage by the state. And in all likelihood, there may be some among us who deal with that inclination. Now, I'd like to step back for a moment and say, one may legitimately ask, why take up this topic homiletically, which can be so divisive, and may risk alienating individuals or families who have real struggles in this area? Don't we already know what the Catholic Church teaches on this matter? Well, it's been my experience that most people actually do not know what the Catholic Church really teaches on the matter of homosexuality or same-sex attraction or unions. Most people, I found, know a caricature of what the Church teaches. Secondly, it has been my experience that the forcefulness with which the agenda to normalize and promote homosexuality and thereby marginalize the Catholic or Christian vision for marriage and family seems to increase every year. Every year, Pride Month in June, just last month, becomes more and more promoted by government agencies, institutions, and corporations. The same can be said regarding the promotion and the normalization of transgenderism. We have to be charitable and compassionate toward those who deal with these issues personally. But we also must be persistently, confidently, and joyfully clear about the truth, lest it not be heard in the midst of all the loud voices that are speaking to the contrary. I'm not going to try to cover all the issues related to this, but my first point is that what the Catholic Church teaches on same-sex attraction and transgenderism, sort of a parallel issue in some regards, needs to be better understood by most everyone, especially us as Catholics. And it needs to be more critically engaged in dialogue with the rest of the culture, as opposed to simply being caricatured or labeled as hateful, since all people know are sound bites of information without any nuance. If this topic touches your family, your life, in some way, then you really are obliged to better educate yourself so that you can talk about it in love. There are a lot of good Catholic resources out there, online, catholicanswers.com, couragerc.org. Courage is the name of the the Catholic apostolate that seeks to reach out to those individuals and their families that deal with same-sex attraction. The Catechism of the Catholic Church offers a very simple and clear and beautiful teaching. Ultimately, the Church's message to those dealing with same-sex attraction centered on a call to chastity, an integration of our sexuality with who we are as a man or a woman, and with our state in life as someone who's married or single. While easily misconstrued by the secular culture, I think is refreshingly hopeful for those who deal with this in their life, because it is markedly different than those who, on one extreme, say that such desires are sinful and persons who deal with them are going to hell, which is not what is said in the scriptures, with scriptures which condemn actions and not temptations or not persons. And those on the other extreme, which is most of the culture, who say such persons must embrace and act out on their desires in order to be fulfilled. Both extremes, sadly offer little real and lasting hope. The Church's message, again, which I'll kind of outline a little bit more in a moment, the Church's message of chastity is, I think, good news, and it's a refreshing alternative. We should be confident of that fact and invite persons that we know and love dealing with this to seriously hear the Church out and to consider it with an open-minded heart. It's the call to self-mastery and chastity possible by God's grace that makes us free to love. The truth of our sexuality, not only revealed by God in the scriptures, but it's also affirmed in nature, our biology, and the natural order of things. The second point that I'd like to address is the widely held or presumed belief that a person dealing with same-sex attraction is born that way or made by God that way. Just because we deal with something in our life that we have not explicitly chosen, such as something like same-sex attraction, does not necessarily mean that such an attraction or tendency is something with which we are born. Some desires are acquired or strengthened by habituation and conditioning instead of by a conscious choice. Sexual desires are subject really to a high degree of cognitive conditioning. Even if there might be a genetic predisposition toward something like homosexuality, and studies on that are quite inconclusive, the behavior remains unnatural because homosexuality is still not part of the natural design for humanity. Scientific studies, for instance, suggest some people are born with, you know, a hereditary disposition to alcoholism. But no one would argue that someone ought to fulfill those inborn urges by becoming an alcoholic. Many are upset by the direct language, you might say, that is used in the Catechism, Catholic Church's Catechism, when it says that Scripture and tradition has always declared that homosexual acts are intrinsically disordered. It uses that phrase, intrinsically disordered, and it makes people, you know, very uncomfortable. Many view that word disordered as a sort of condemnation of the person. Well, I got news for you. Every one of us in this room, if you sin or have desires that incline you to sin, deal with disorder in your life. We are all disordered. If you deal with same-sex attraction, welcome to the Catholic Church. Welcome to the Catholic Church, where you'll meet pretty much every one of us who must confront the disorders in our life and strive with God's grace to work through them. Welcome. Anyone who struggles with same-sex attraction is welcome to find a home in the Catholic Church. But with that welcome comes a call, just like we are all called to holiness, a call to embrace an alternative way of life that fully conforms to the gospel and leads one to real freedom. As opposed to entering a same-sex relationship, such persons, again, this is just a kind of, again, explain really what the Church teaches, such persons are called to chastity. As the Catechism says, by the virtue of self-mastery that teach them inner freedom, at times by the support of disinterested friendship, as opposed to entering into a romantic relationship, disinterested friendship, by prayer and sacramental grace, they can and should gradually and resolutely approach Christian perfection, sanctity, holiness. Many view the call to chastity, and we're all called to chastity, depending on our state in life, by the way. Many view that call to chastity and the prohibition to enter into a same-sex relationship or union as a prohibition to happiness and fulfillment. But such an approach is not only a faithless distrust of God's goodwill for us and his love for us, but it is a denial of the Christian mystery that our share in the cross of Jesus is ultimately what leads to our real happiness. Finally now, just a brief word on the issue of transgenderism. Again, there's some parallels between these two topics, and I suppose in many ways this is almost the maybe more spoken of issue of our day. We first acknowledge that people who deal with, you know, what is called gender dysphoria suffer a great deal, just as those who may deal with same-sex attraction. Since real love requires willing the true good of the other, the Church can only hold up on this issue what God has revealed in nature and in Scripture and tradition, believing that that is what is true and good and leads to our happiness. So regardless of how one feels interiorly about their gender identity, they are called to holiness and self-giving love. While such persons may feel like things like sex reassignment surgery or hormone therapy will heal their body to be more in line with their perceived gender identity, such actions only hurt one's dignity, because this is how we were created by God. In the Christian, the biblical vision, body and soul go together, and our society wants to separate them. We would never, they are what form our identity as sons and daughters of God. We would never, for example, permit a person suffering from anorexia nervosa to undergo liposuction so that their body could be more in keeping with how they felt about their body. There are other steps that one can take to help one's mind not be at war with their body. When it comes to trying to dialogue and speak on these issues of homosexuality and transgenderism, often seems to be a great disconnect between the culture and the Catholic or traditional Christian response. It seems that much of the culture begins the discussion with the experience and the subjective feelings of the individual person, and their perception of themselves and their identity, which is important and certainly must be reverenced. However, keeping the discussion on the level of subjective feelings and self-perception puts a great limitation on the discussion. The Catholic approach takes a step back and begins the discussion with what God has revealed in nature and the whole of the scriptures and tradition. Since God created us and loves us and knows what is best for us, and He gives us our identity, only He gives us our identity, we strive to begin from that point rather than from ourselves to help lead us to true happiness. For any persons who deal with same-sex attraction or gender dysphoria, we as Catholics believe in a God of justice and mercy, and a God who, as our scriptures today tell us, is generous. To accept His teachings and design for our lives, we must trust with abandon His generosity. In persistent prayer, to which our gospel calls us, we seek to have our lives conformed to His will and plan for our happiness.